In this week's Parsha, Parsha's Emor, I'll try to be a little bit quicker than I usually am. I'll try at least. I want to focus on a few ideas, a few small points. We have a lot going on around us now, both just finishing Pesach Sheni, and the middle of Sfira, and around the corner from Lag BaOmer, which many of you, I'm sure, will be celebrating in a very festive fashion that hopefully will not include learning. Double negative means it includes learning. Not. Lo Shanu Ella. But I would like to start off, if I can, with a Pshai Sars morning about not this holiday, but the holiday of Yom Kippur. Now, this week's parsha is Emor, so I'm starting with it, Yom Kippur, even though it's nothing related necessarily to the time we're in, but it's related to the parsha that we're reading right now. Rav Aaron Cutler points out, if you look in Perek Chav Dalid, Chav Gimel, Pasuk, thank you. Pasuk Chav Zayin, so it's Chav Gimel Chav Zayin, this week's parsha. Thank you, Jesse. Silverman. So the Pasuk says the following. Right after it describes Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, it says, Ach, be'asor l'chodesh shvi hazeh, Yom Kippurimu. But, he says, the 10th day of this month, of this 7th month, is Yom Kippur. So Rav Aaron Cutler asks, what do you mean this 7th month? We said a minute ago, he said, b'chodesh shvi, be'echad l'chodesh, yelachem shavason, zichron shruah, mikra kodesh. That's referring to Rosh Hashanah. It doesn't say, b'chodesh hashvi hazeh. We know, it's talking about the 7th month. What's hazeh? Why are we here to say hazeh? We said the 7th month, Rosh Hashanah time, and the 10th day of the same 7th month. What other 7th month is there? There's only one 7th month. Why is he saying Hazeh? So I'm going to point out a very, very important point, which is not relevant to this Chag, but in general. And that is the following. He says that Yom Kippur only is Yom Kippur because it's Rosh Hashanah that precedes it, and it follows that same month 10 days later. Something called Hachana, preparation. When you have a Chag that you're celebrating, if you prepare for it in advance properly, that preparation makes the Chag the Chag. It makes it what it is today. And therefore, Davka Yom Kippur is what it is because it's that same 7th month you already celebrate Rosh Hashanah on. That same 7th month, you have Yom Kippur, and that makes Yom Kippur Yom Kippur. Without that, it wouldn't be a real Yom Kippur. Hazeh, because you already had Rosh Hashanah time, that's what makes Yom Kippur at the end of the day. Because it was the same Hazeh, that same 7th month. That's what Aaron Cutler points out. He says over here, he stresses the need for Hachana for whatever we do. Right now, we're in the middle of a Sfiras Omer. We also have our own Hachana. And if those of us look around the room a little bit, most of us have very strange things growing on our faces. Some of us look better than others, myself not included in that. I don't look that good with my kids tell me all the time. They tell me I shaved the whole thing off, they told me. But after now, it's really bad. What are we doing? So we're commemorating a certain state of fallen Jews, of 24,000 Jews of Rabbi Kiva's students who Nebuch died in this period of time. We're not just supposed to be mourning them with our facial, you know, our facial hair and our lack of haircuts. We mourn them based on a certain behavior that they made a mistake about. We're supposed to be working doubly hard to fix that problem. And I wonder, everyone here is mocking on their midos right now about the idea of what they messed up on, as they are about the rules of Sfiras HaOmer with their haircuts and their beards. My guess is most of us are not, myself certainly included. Are we taking into account not only the external workings of these days, of make sure that we're not cutting and shaving, but how about the essence of what they messed up on? Are we working on that to fix that problem? So not only do we mourn, but we also do tshuva for them. That's my question. That's where I think we're challenged. I think I said before a little while earlier that to celebrate Lag BaOmer in a way where you go to Beirut to celebrate and you don't learn Torah that next day means you're missing the book. You know, it's Iker Chasser Min HaSefer, that the most important part of the day is really lacking. You're celebrating Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's opening Torah to our eyes by doing what? By sleeping through morning Seder because you go to Beirut all night long. Go to Beirut, enjoy Beirut, but then go the next day to Seder and tough it out a little bit, or don't go at all. But to go and then miss Seder afterwards. Dafka, it's like shaving, not shaving, it's not cutting your hair, and we don't have gumidos. We keep the same the same lack of cover they showed each other, and you keep it to each other as well. That would be completely backward, it doesn't make any sense at all. So with that in mind, I want to discuss Sfiras HaOmer, preparing for Matan Torah. And Rav Schwab points out a very fascinating pshat, and a very big chiddush, big drush, based on one of the halachas that we have by Sfiras HaOmer. So Sfiras HaOmer, it says, how are we supposed to say it? How? So let's say sitting down, sitting up, lying down. How do you say it?
Standing up.
Dafka. Dafka. It's even a question for Yotze if you don't stand up. It's a question. Yotze at all if you don't stand up. It's based on the Pasuk. The Pasuk brings down, not here. It says, Me'achel charmesh bekama. So we say, ah, bekama, you should be koma, standing up, like a kama, like a stalk. You should be standing up. It compares us to a stalk. And the Sfiras Omer is the cutting of the stalk. So the stalk is up before you cut it. So too, we just the Pesach Halacha brought down, based on this word, bekama, bekoma, standing up. You should be standing up when you say Sfiras Omer. It compares us to the stalk. So says Reb Schwab the following chiddush, a big chiddush. He says, we're compared to the stalk before the before it's cut, and when it's cut, that's the idea of Sfiras Omer is the new grains that were cut down to be offered. We count from these grains to Matan Torah to tell us the following important lesson: the ground represents this world and physicality. If you want to stand the chance to be able to prepare for Matan Torah, then you have to cut that connection, that deep connection. In some way, you have to cut it a little bit in order to allow yourself to really prepare for Matan Torah properly. If we're so consumed and obsessed with this world and these areas, whether it be food items, whether it be sports, whether it be any other physical desire we have, when we're so attached to them, I mean, before we cut them, that would be part of the Omer count. It's not going to work. You can count days, but does absolutely nothing for us. But you want to be part of the preparation for Sfiras HaOmer, you have to cut that connection. Not that you have to therefore become an ascetic where you don't do anything in the physical in the world, but you have to realize that this is not about physicality right now. I'm dafka trying to cut and break from the physicality, see a little bit more spirituality. Whether it be that you're in yeshiva or even no matter where you are. That's the lesson of Rav Schwab connecting us to this period of time that we're in Sfiras HaOmer. And not only that, but if you remember, Rabbi Amalei spoke about on Tuesday, hopefully you guys were listening to it, the idea that we don't count down, though normally we do count down for things. Blast off, we count down. Any sports game, you count down. The reason why is because counting down implies, this is what my own shot, I think, but maybe I've seen it elsewhere, I don't remember. Countdown implies something's going to happen outside of you. The blast off's going to happen outside of you. The game's going to tick, the clock's going to tick down outside of you. Counting up is when you are required to invest energy to build on something. And therefore, if you want to try to build up towards Matan Torah, then you have to be counting up towards it. You have to be preparing yourself by counting up. I remember one time, I heard a story one time that in the old days, not anymore they have this, but it was, now you're well past this technology-wise, but there was some device, I forget what device it was, that you could beam things to each other. What was that? Palm pilot. Thank you, a palm pilot. So one time, there was a person on the plane, and it says on, you know, the guy says over here, he has like a Tanakh in his thing. He said, oh, you want me to beam it to you? He's like, sure. So he beams it to the guy, and you have to accept. So it says, do you wish to accept the Torah? Mm-hmm. So it's like, Matan Torah over here, it's fantastic. You click on accept, and you got it. You got the Torah. Your mom is like, Har Sinai again. So it happens to be that they had to go through a process to accept the Torah. So we can, of course, we can, on a BlackBerry maybe, accept the Torah. But if you want it to be a real acceptance, it has to be something where you don't just click a button and accept, but you have to build up, cut up a little bit of your connection to this world. Now, I don't mean you have to be crazy, but try to distance yourself from the physicality right now and work on trying to find a way to connect to the spirituality. I heard in the radio just yesterday that the following mushroom, and I want to lead into the last part. I know time's already run out, but we last probably done in only a few minutes. The story goes from Akiva. Tells story of Akiva. He was the Gemara brings it down as well. That he was conversing with one of the Rishayim of the generation that was not Jewish, one of our persecutors, and he was saying to Akiva, "You guys don't believe in God." He says, "What are you talking about? Of course you do." He says, "No, why do you give money to a poor person? Why do you give money to a poor person? God made him poor." Let God have his way with him. He clearly wants to become poor. I'll give you muscle, he says. It's like a person. Imagine you have a king. And the king decides to lock someone up for whatever reason it is. And he says, I want no one to give him food or drink. Locking him up, putting him in jail. Can you imagine the chutzpah of a servant of that king sneaking food into the chamber, into the solitary confinement where the person is? That's what you're doing. This guy was, my God chose for some reason to become a poor person. God left him, you know, to be miserable. And how dare you go now and help him out? It's the question that he asked. And Rekiva says back to him, you say good, it's a good muscle, but there's one piece of the story you're missing. The king put someone, and he isolated them, and you asked him, the problem was the king isolated, it wasn't just someone, it was his son. The king isolated his son. He put his son, and he made that rule also for his son. But he doesn't want that to happen to his son. He didn't make his son in isolation. He did make his son, he made a rule. No one can give him to eat. But imagine when his other son quietly covertly figured out a way to give the first son who's in jail food, the king is so happy about that. It's a son. And the brothers work together to help each other out, though the father gave a real strong decree against him. The king is very excited about that. He's very happy that things worked out behind his back to save his son's life. And that it was his own son who did it even makes it even nicer. So it happens to be that mashal, and Rav Moshe Weiss brings it down as well in a different part of our parsha, is very much related to the concept that we are in currently right now. And that's the concept of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, of Midos, of giving people, of being kind to people. Rav Moshe points out that it says this parsha describes about to kill the Makal, the person who cursed God, and the person who was not really Jewish. He was from Sheva Dan, but really his mother, he was really from a father who was not from Sheva Dan. There's a whole story of who he was. And the Gemara, the Chumash describes how he was found guilty. The Gemara brings down many opinions of what he was guilty of and why he was not part of the inheritance. And they were going to kill the Makalo. They were going to kill him. But they didn't. But before it says what they did to him, it says all the rules of stealing and hurting people and how you can't hurt people, you can't steal from people. And over there, Moshe Feinstein points out, why do you break up the punishment or the court case of this person with a punishment by telling all the rules that happened of being care of people's property and people's money? So he said the following fascinating chiddush. He says, you can never punish someone for death until you realize that they're your brother. How much we have to care about them, how much we have to love them. When you love someone, then I can trust you to be a good dayan. If you find me guilty and chayav misa, okay, so be chayav misa. But you can't possibly judge a person until you realize how much you're supposed to love them, how much he's a creation and a creature of God. And until you feel that way, you can't judge them. It's inappropriate to do so. That's why many people, they throw it out of court case because they're biased. They show them bias. You can't be a judge if you're biased. So to be able to judge someone harshly, you have to first love them. So Moshe Feinstein explains the juxtaposition that we have between the court cases and the trial and the in-between area of all the rules of damaging of people's property and damaging people's body. Because you have to realize that these people are important. And before you kill them, before you destine them to death, you sentence them to death, you have to realize how important they are. The final point of here I would like to just to raise, and then we'll stop at this point in time, is a quick story. I read this last night with my girls, and the importance of having kavod of people kavod. So the story goes: Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector one time was a big rav, the kavod rav, and he went. He was going somewhere out of his town, out of his country, to a neighboring country, and everyone gathered in mass, and they wanted to greet him and hear his words of Torah. And there are very, very many wealthy people there that wanted to give him money also. They wanted to give him money and donate and be part of his legacy of Torah. And there was a certain rich man who went over to him and tried to get close to him and give him Torah, to give him money, I'm sorry, so he could be part of the chelik of his Torah. Ritz Elchanan looks at him and says, I'm sorry. In the old days, maybe, but not now. I can't take your money now. It's like, what? So again, he's like, you know, in the old days I would have taken it, but I won't take it now. He's like, what do you mean? What do you mean in the old days you would have taken it? So he said, I'll tell you a story. I'll tell you a mashal. There's a man whose name was Yitzchak. Yitzchak, one time, he came from a very poor family. He was an orphan boy, and he used to go and he used to travel. And one time, he went to a place where he was trying to get lodging for the night. And the mother of that house invited him in and saw his nebuch, his clothing. He had no clothes at all. He was poor beyond belief. And she said, "You know what? I have a son of mine who's exactly your size. He's getting married very soon. He's a chassan, and his old clothes he's not going to wear anymore. They're pretty new. I'll give him all. Take them all. I'll give them to you." And sure enough, she brings a whole pack of beautiful clothing. And she hands him to this Yitzchak and says, "You know, make a life for yourself. Dress nicer, be warmer." And he's so appreciative. As he's about to walk out, the chassan, the boy walks in and sees this poor schlump holding his clothes. He says, "Listen, I'll do you one better. I'll give you a job. Work for me. I see a big Talmud Chacham I hear about you. Work for me 2 days a week. 2 days a week, work for me, learn the rest of the time. I'll give you money. I'll give you a salary." Rav Yitzchak says, I don't want to work. I want to learn. It's all day. I want to learn. I want to write chidushim. I want to inspire people through learning. I don't want to work. He's like, I understand. You know what? 2 hours a week. Work for me for 2 hours a week. That's all you got to do. And I'll pay you tremendously. No more words for anything in the world. I'll give you so much money. He says back to me, I'm sorry. He says, 2 hours a week, I won't work for them even. I won't work. I'm not interested in working. I'm not suggesting we should take this attitude. I'm not interested in working at all. I want to learn. I want to connect to God through learning. So this man, this chassam was so upset. He said back to him, he said, forget it. He's like, I want to do you a favor. You don't want that? Then you can't have my clothes either. And he grabbed the clothes back, and this poor Yitzchak was left without anything. So Yitzchak back to this person, Yitzchak Hanan, that was me.
and you were that chassan. And years ago, I needed help, and I wanted you to be part of it. I wanted you to help me out with it. He said, but you blew it. You blew it. You had no kavod. You had no respect for me. And all of a sudden, now you want to give me money so you can be part of my Torah? He says, in the old days, I would have taken it, but not anymore. It's too late for you right now. That story is about the lack of kavod you can show someone else. People who are different than us. This person couldn't chop. I don't understand. You don't want to work? What's wrong with you? Different than we are. Kavod means that you realize someone is a creature of God. God created him. You're from God. I love you. You're from God, so therefore I care about you. Here we are with our faces not shaven and our hair somewhat unkempt, some of us at least. And yet, has our kavod for our friend changed? Have you worked on figuring out, besides the rules of Sirius Omer, of shaving, can I shave tomorrow for Lagba Omer, how do I go about working on my character? Matan Torah is time for preparing things. Well, part of preparing is getting better at things we're not so good at. And dafka this time of year, we were not good at kavod. We're bad at kavod. If you're not sure how kavod and the Torah fit together, there's a certain lack of kavod of Torah that exists in yeshiva in general, in the world in general, but certainly in yeshiva as well. Someone's giving a shiur in Torah, and you're talking in the middle of a shiur, or the base medrash, and you check your phone for a sports update in the base medrash. That's such a lack of kavod. It's so insulting. Can you imagine my wife's about to tell me some important thing, and I check my phone for the updated score of some game? She'd be furious with me. Now, the difference is that my wife maybe won't find out about it because I'm doing it under the table. She won't know about it, maybe. Maybe. But God does know about it. And he sits you, he watches you sit in front of a sefer, and then you get a text about what your plans are tonight for dinner. And you close it for a second, and you text your friend in the base medrash, closing up the book that you're supposed to be reading to decide where you're going to dinner tonight. That's not a din of kavod chaver, it's a din of kavod of the Torah. The last story I want to share with you quickly, and I'll let you go. I'll say it already. This is a good one, though. I think I may have told you already. If I did, I'm sorry. So I asked you beforehand. The story goes, it was one Erev Yom Kippur. Sorry, one Yom Kippur. And it was during, right before Ne'ilah, and we had a speech from before Ne'ilah. Rabbi Miller gave a speech. And there's a big, big kibbud. A big kibbud before Ne'ilah is opening the Aron before Ne'ilah. It's a big kibbud. You open the Aron Kodesh for Ne'ilah. And they had a bid back then. They bid money. Who would be the one, be Zohar, to open up the Aron Kodesh for Ne'ilah? And there was a very, very wealthy man in the community. He was very, very big tzaddik also. I think his name was Baron Rothschild, they called him. And sure enough, when the bidding began, he was aiming sky high. There's another wealthy man in the community, not as righteous, but also very wealthy. And he was, I forgot his name, but he was bidding opposite Baron Rothschild. They're both bidding, back and forth. Until finally the amount got to such a high amount, like in the vicinity of tens of thousands of dollars. Maybe even close to $100,000, when finally the other person says, $200,000. It was in rubles, not in dollars, but $200,000. And the place gasps. Baron Rothschild looked at him and was like, kol kavod, you know, it's yours. And sure enough, you know, going once, going twice, three times, sold to the wealthy man in the back $200,000 to open up the arm for Ne'ilah. And the guy next to him extends his hand in congratulations and says, wow, congratulations on purchasing Ne'ilah on Yom Kippur Day. So special, he's so much money. He says, thank you so much. By the way, he says to him, there's one thing I don't know. He's like, yeah, what's that? So the man says, the man who's won Ne'ilah says, what's psicha? What does it mean? What am I doing? What are you doing? He says, you just spent $200,000, you don't know what you're doing? He says, I have no idea what it is, but I know one thing. This other guy who has been against me, he's very wealthy. And he's also very, very smart. And if he wanted it really badly, it must be really important. What is it though? A person can realize things are chashav, even if he doesn't know chashav. He doesn't know, but he knows that this guy is chashav, and he thinks it's chashav, so it must be chashav. The Torah begs of us, it begs, two things. Number one, this period of time, kavod chaverim. You have to figure out a way to work on your, not only your beard and your hair, but on your friends. Or really, more importantly, you're not friends. How do you show respect and honor to people who aren't just like you? And number two, if you want to channel this energy to make it a stage of building towards the Torah, then you have to figure out a way to disconnect a little bit from the physical world, as Rav Schwab pointed out, to cut a little bit of the ground that we were on all the time. And remember that the biggest most appropriate thing that we can do to grab and be excited about Matan Torah is to appreciate that it's special. And whether you feel it or not, as the man who bought an eel didn't even know what he was doing, but someone else who maybe you care and respect a little bit, he does feel it. Look at Rabbi David. Take a person, Rabbi Yashiv, take a person, you know, Zatzal, someone who you know is great. And how much they respect it, I don't get it at all. But I respect them. And if they respect it, then I too respect it. We should merit in the next few days, Lag BaOmer, celebrate with Simcha, the excitement of what it means to work on ourselves, to uncover Torah, the depths and beauty of Torah. And then when we finish Lag BaOmer, to actually channel ourselves to the same Kavod HaTorah that we're celebrating Shem Baruch Hai with. Have a good Sabbath.